Hello.
Aloha.
Welcome to Praise Dionysus.
Praise him.
And today, welcome back to the final episode of Jake and Jamesy's Chuckle Fest for 2024.
Yes.
Well done, boys. We'll talk about this more in time, I'm sure.
What?
The fact that it's the last episode of the Chuckle Fest this year.
Oh, yes. Yeah. We'll probably cry. I'll probably say something I don't mean, then shove you.
And I'll probably confess my love for someone.
Yes.
And today on the Chuckle Fest, we're going to be talking about Dice, Paper, Roll and Friends by Dice, Paper, Roll. Frequent Shit Live by Conk. When I Grow Up by Jeremiah Detto. And In the Wings by Chuckling Dino Productions.
Mm-hmm.
Stumbled on Frequent Shit. That's hard to say.
It is?
Frequent Shit. Yeah, it's hard.
Because of all the T's?
Yeah, you don't expect the T to run directly into a sh. T. Frequent Shit.
Isn't language fun?
No.
Oh. Anyway, let's get started.
I guess so.
Hi there, James.
Hello, Jake.
Hey, how's it going? I'm fine. Shut up.
No, me first.
I want to showcase my inquisitiveness.
No, this is good. We should overlap more. How are you feeling now that we're at the end of our Comedy Fest journey for 2024?
I am on record as not wanting to ever preempt any sort of closure. Let's get there first and then let's celebrate. You know?
A real insight into the life of Jake.
Yes. Don't take anything for granted, especially if it's something you're looking forward to, for it shall be snatched away, more likely if you get excited for it. You want to sneak up on the glee.
Okay. So normal day. How are you, Jake?
Me? Thriving. Thriving.
For now.
Surviving. 65-ing. Everything's the best.
What's a 65?
I don't know. I'm not a real sex encyclopedia. But if we're going to... if it's a variation on the 69, which of course is the numbers representing the physical form of the sex participants, a 65 would be somebody kneeling down in front of a toilet. A lot of that.
Mostly toilet stuff. Jake's been really expressing himself recently through scat.
Masala chai.
Eat my poo. Masala chai.
What about you and your life?
Wait, that's really what you're going to say for how you...
I've got more stuff going on. I'll tell you about it soon.
Okay.
What have you been doing?
What have I been doing? I watched the new... Oh, Jake. I watched the new Fallout series.
Okie dokie doo.
Mm-hmm. Have you heard about the new Fallout series?
Is that just a documentary talking about people going grocery shopping and the bags don't work?
No, it's
no?
a story. It's a,
I'd watch that.
It's a gritty series about dealing
Get
with...
Get cancelled. I have more material.
it's a gritty series about people dealing with prolapse.
Oh, yuck.
Yeah, because Fallout.
I hope they're okay, though. I don't know why I suddenly care about them.
It's not that.
Yes, I do. I'm worried about their prolapse. Yeah, continue.
May I have the floor? It's... Don't.
No, these rugs are expensive.
it's a TV series based on the game, Fallout series. And it's all about, like, this gritty retro-future series set after, like, a nuclear apocalypse in this, like, already 50s aesthetic future. And it's great. It's a really good game. I love the game. Played all the games. Love them. And the TV series is, once again, one of those examples, including The Last of Us, that is now like, oh, video games have good stories, and if we just treat them right, we can make really incredible TV shows out of them.
Mm-hmm.
And they did that, and it's now my favorite TV show. It's like in my top three.
Tremendous. I do not know how I would ask you any questions about it.
Oh, sure. Okay. Well, I can tell you that there is...
If I were a video game nerd... And I was like, if Fallout World meant a lot to me, what would I ask about? How did they represent the octopus monster?
Sure, I see. Yep, I see the fruitlessness of this conversation.
No. Fortunately, I have this character that I can employ to ask you dweeby
questions.
Jake
has recently stumbled across a character he's come up with, which is Rosamund Pike.
Yes.
Specifically, Rosamund Pike from Saltburn.
Sort of. Sort of, Ollie. welcome to... Welcome to Saltburn. Oh.
Yeah, okay. We had to, like,
I discovered her in the kitchen. I love it.
I had to really rein him in before the recording of this episode. I want you all to know that I had to do a lot of work to get to this table. It was a lot of shut up, Jake, is what I had to say.
Yes, he's not nice to me.
No, but I'm not.
I really enjoyed discovering my Rosie. And now she's a part of me.
Yeah, I'm excited to see where she takes you.
Me too.
Okay, how would you rate your experience of Rosamund Pike?
No, I've got more. What else is happening? I went to this thing they did. You know how, like, most nights of, maybe every night of the comedy festival, they do something different at the festival club?
Yes.
Yeah, so I went to one of the nights that they had, because I liked the premise of it, and the idea was that it was a bunch of comedians auditioning to be in Cats.
Oh.
Yeah, it was kind of like Bliss. It was hosted by Michelle Brazier and Ben Russell, which was my first experience of the two of them. In my head, Michelle Brazier, because people bring her up to me, and they were always like, oh, have you seen her stuff? Do you like her? I was like, I don't know who she was, but I also had an image of who I thought she was, and she's not at all the woman that I thought she was. That's not interesting, but that's the journey I've gone on, because now I've seen her on stage, and she's marvelous.
Oh, she's incredible. Yeah, she's fantastic. I love Michelle Brazier.
Great. Yeah, okay, I guess I do now, too.
I think a lot of people's first experience with Michelle Brazier has been through Auntie Donna. Because she's, like, involved... She was involved with a lot of, like, early Auntie Donna stuff.
Okay.
Yeah, but she's, like, yeah, fully got her own rich inner world of comedy going on.
How do you know about her rich inner world?
It felt like the right thing to say, and now I kind of regret it. Let's not dwell.
Okay, sure. But, yeah, she and Ben, yeah, emceed this thing. And yeah, it was marvelous. It was just, yeah, a series of comedians that were there. Annie and Lena performed, who we talked about. Zoe Coombs-Ma was there. Nate Velvo. But I think the whole thing... Part of the appeal of it, so they'd come out one by one, and then the two hosts would kind of, like, insult these auditionees. Gillian Cosgrove was playing the piano the entire time.
Oh, God, she's talented.
To support their auditioning.
She's so smart.
Yeah. And it was marvelous, partly because it's just thrilling anytime, because so many of these comedians have these, like, out-of-nowhere surprise talent for, like, musical theatre. They just have these, like, wild voices they bring out.
Yeah, right.
And I just think it's fun when people have these remarkably polished, like, vicious weapons of talent that they bring out for hilarious reasons.
Yes.
I just think it's kind of funny. It's almost like using, like, a really beautiful, antique, ornate Viking axe to, like, cut up salami. It just somehow feels like that, which I really like. But I think a high point of the whole thing, which was, like, one of, like, the peaks of my comedy festival experience. It was so funny. And it had also been a while since I'd been in an audience of that size. You know, like, when you have the full comedy festival club, it's really, like, a big crowded vibe.
Mm.
But I think the final moment of the show was all of the comedians from New Zealand coming on stage and singing Do You Hear the People Sing together from Les Mis. And it was
That's really beautiful.
It was breathtaking. It was so nice. That was a hefty experience of mine lately.
That's an incredible experience.
It was wonderful, yeah. It was wonderful. So that's that.
What was the event called?
It was it was some sort of generic festival club name. I don't know, like comedians audition for musicals or something.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So how would you rate your fallout?
Yeah,
rate the three-headed dog, sir?
It's actually Sir Boris.
What's Cerberus?
Cerberus, the three-headed dog in Greek mythology.
Oh, of course, I'm a fool.
So by saying sir, you sort of alluded to Cerberus, so I felt like I had to finish it anyway.
Well, fair enough, master.
Shut up, Jake. Shut up with that.
If you want me to talk, nerd.
Don't know if you can hear me getting annoyed, but you're getting under my skin and making me feel bad.
About what?
You did a cool thing by going to see a bunch of cool comedians. I'm a virgin. And that's fine. I would rate it...
Rate what? Your virginhood?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Zero, because it doesn't exist.
Wow!
Oh, ba-da-da-do! Ba-da-da-da-do!
Fine.
Bow, bow! What would you rate your cool experience?
I don't know. Let's go, like, 28 stars, because I feel like that's how many New Zealand people were up on that stage singing Les Mis.
Jesus, they really are starting a revolution.
It was a really crowded stage. It was great. Grateful that we got to see a few of them for this Chucklefest of ours.
Yeah.
Abby Howells being one that, like, you know, leaks out as one that I'm especially grateful for. But, what a fine country.
New Zealand.
Based on my experience of it having never gone there.
Yeah.
Zacchaeus from New Zealand.
Yeah,
she's
I know lots
great.
Of good Kiwis. Pretty much, it's almost all the Kiwis I know are lovely.
Yes. Everyone that wasn't on the evil side of the embroilment of the whole, like, Lord of the Rings Hobbit scandal.
Again, you allude to this Hobbit scandal. Yes. Oh, yeah, where they just, like, fucked a bunch of artists over.
Sure, that's a very... Yeah, that's a way to sort of, like, summarize it, kind of. Sure, look into it if you want. It's interesting. It really changed the way that people engage professionally, cinematically, over in New Zealand.
Hmm.
Yeah, but anyway, do you want to talk about some goddamn comedy?
That's why we're here.
Okay.
Roll for initiative, please.
Are you speaking Spanish?
That's a little D&D joke for all of the listeners at home that get it.
I appreciate it.
Yeah, he does get to come back for this one, because he would have fit right in.
Oh, yeah!
Hello. Hi, Jake.
Hello, James.
Hello. I went to see a show at the Motley Mow House.
Cool.
I wouldn't really call it a show so much as like a live recording of a podcast.
Is that what it was?
Yes, it was called Dice, Paper, Roll, and Friends. It's a live recording of a D&D session.
Okay.
Now, Jake, what's your... You've never had any experience with D&D, have you?
I saw the Dungeons & Dragons episode of Community.
Oh, you can't watch that anymore?
Because of...
They took it down.
Did they?
Yeah, because
just of... Just that one episode?
Yeah, because of Chang in supposed blackface when he's dressed as the night elf.
Oh.
He's got, like, black face paint on, and it's like... You know, they draw attention to it as being potentially problematic.
Okay.
And then, but no, they took it down.
Okay. I've seen that, and I've seen the World of Warcraft episode of South Park.
Oh, that's not it.
And I've also seen Jumanji.
So, no, you've had no experience with Dungeons & Dragons, and that's fine.
Thank you.
For the listener point of view, if you're just tuning in, I play Dungeons & Dragons, and I love it. I think it's great. I think it's really fun. My boyfriend, Flynn... I thought I might pop it in here and just see if we could get away with it. But
oh my
no,
God.
He caught me.
He's got a boyfriend.
I've got a boyfriend. Huge. Yeah, we met in the Feywilds.
Oh, is that where gay people live?
In D&D, yeah.
Oh.
Kind of.
And does D&D stand for something different in the Feywilds?
Dumb, nasty dicks.
Oh. Yes, please.
Sign me up. Okay, Roz. It sounds like something Rosamund Pike would be into.
Oh, that's interesting. Oh, I hadn't thought about that. I suppose.
It's a bit Keira Knightley.
No, my Keira Knightley's more
your
like
this. Your Keira's a lot more grungly, spangly. Skunga? Okay. Shut up. Anywho. Shut up. So, D&D went along. Flynn also plays Dungeons & Dragons, mm-hmm. So he and I decided to go to this.
Sounds like a cool couple to me.
We're very cool. We're very cool. We love it. Mm-hmm. And we sat on down. Mama, this is... So it was upstairs at Motley Bow House.
Mm-hmm.
Full house. Mm-hmm. From front row to the very back row. And they had put in extra seats. Completely full.
Wow.
Like, huge following. So, Dice, Paper, Roll is a... They do a podcast where they, like, play Dungeons & Dragons. And you can follow along and listen to the campaign that's being played. And they have, like, guests on every now and again. So, they've clearly built up quite a following. And so, we come along and sit down. And the guest on tonight is Miss Whittrop. Do you know Miss Whittrop?
I've heard the name, because I think I remember looking at the name and thinking, that's fun to spell words like that.
Okay.
I like the look of the name.
Great. Well, I love the comedian. She is another person who I also first experienced through Auntie Donna. She's also in like a few of their skits, but also obviously has her own comedic chops and skills going on. And she's just this really... I love her a lot. She's got like a really great energy and her delivery behind all of her lines. And she's got this incredible confidence. Sort of person that like, after everything that she did, Flynn and I would sort of whisper queen to each other. You know? Like that sort of person. Oh God, yeah, we're like that. I'm sorry.
Oh.
I was obviously thrilled that I got to see Mish be the guest this time. Because they did the show a few times. They had different guests every night. And so I love Mish.
Oh, so they did it a number of times.
Yeah, they did it. I can't remember how many, but they did it more than once.
Okay.
Yeah,
for some
reason
in my head it was a one-off thing. Okay, cool.
No, they did four. And
cool.
We were lucky enough to see one of them.
That's one quarter.
Great.
Good maths, Jake.
One of the...
So thank you.
Who's this guy? What's this guy's name?
I'm the nerdy friend.
Yeah, what's his name?
Arthur.
Sorry, all the Arthurs out there. You've been roasted. So the good thing about Mish being the guest is that she is not like a D&D fanatic. Mm. So she needed a lot of things like explained to her as we went along.
Ah.
And were they explained to her by the people on stage with her? No, they're explained by the very keen to prove their knowledge D&D audience.
Ah, the Jameses.
Not the Jameses. Kind of the Jameses sometimes. And the Flynns, but everyone in this audience. The thing that I'm going to speak about most probably is the audience in this show.
Because
it was such a wonderful, nervous vibe. D&D, it attracts nerds. You know? Okay. Obviously. I'm a nerd. Flynn's a nerd. Everyone in this room's a nerd. We're all watching someone play D&D.
Mm-hmm.
And so throughout the show, you could see like different interactions. There was like a few people in the front row that were clearly like longtime supporters because they knew all the actors knew her by name and would sort of like have a chat with her every now and again. There was a father and his son sitting in the front row, and the father had like some nerd t-shirt on saying like nerd for life. And like his son was really excited to be here, and they were just having a fun time watching. And every time anyone had like a question on stage, there would be like three or four people who would just shout from the audience what the answer is. And I just think that's a very strong community to have behind you.
Yeah.
Yeah. So also up on the stage, we have Jack Kirby Crosby, who's DMing. So that's dungeon mastering for those of you playing along. Benjamin Clements, Greg Pickering, Emil Freund, Dan Last. So that's the gang.
Did you say Dan Last on purpose?
I didn't mean to, but now that I've said it out loud, isn't that funny?
Hilarious
Thank
choice.
Thank you so much. So a few of the highlights.
Today I came across the idea of saying the sentence, "No pressure, Fran Drescher." And that's just a thing that I wanted to say. Continue!
That's good, because you come up with a lot of those, because one thing that I've stolen from you is no stressing, Deborah Messing.
Oh, great.
Yeah, yes. I use that at work all the time.
And also, what's the matter, seafood platter?
That's a good one. What are you thinking, Abraham Lincoln?
Yes!
That's another great... You do a lot of these.
Not on purpose.
No.
My brain's just
brain's
broken.
Wrong. Okay. some of my highlights real quick. Greg Pickering playing Percy the Piss Wizard.
Okay.
I should probably explain what the... So, the premise for this one is, and this is a very classic D&D thing, they did a one-shot, which is where you have, like, a... It's a single session, you sit down, and ideally it finishes in, like, a few hours.
Okay.
So, for this one, it was 2 hours.
Mm-hmm.
And the general premise is, these friends are sort of... They used to work on a spaceship, and now they've been fired, so they're in line for Space Centrelink. And Space Centrelink gives them a job to clean out some sewers.
Okay.
Which is a very classic D&D thing.
Do we meet the characters? Are they in line?
They're in line for Space Centrelink.
Okay.
And they have to, you know, get on the doll. So that's how we sort of meet them all. And it's interesting watching, because I've played a few, like, day one sessions of D&D. It's interesting seeing it from the point of view of people actively being watched and perceived by another audience and not just themselves. Because they then, everything that happens is sort of like a chance for a joke, or it's a chance for like character building or something. Whereas in a real D&D session, you know, there might be a lot of like quiet moments or characters sort of more, I don't know, not necessarily trying to make the most out of everything. But for this, it was great because they're clearly like all very competent comedians and clearly have a lot of chemistry already. So they know how to like bada bing, bada boom and roll with some jokes.
Okay.
Because
this collection of people are the people. Why are you making that?
Sorry, just... Okay.
No, that's... Yeah, I'm just...
Pretend to enjoy
it. No. So these people that are doing this, apart from Mish, these are the people from the podcast.
Yes.
It's always this collection of people.
As far as I'm aware, it's not always this collection. I think much like Impromptunes, I think they have a few people that swap in and out.
A few people on the roster.
On the roster, exactly. But I imagine there's a few of them that are the core group.
Okay.
Yeah, and I'm going to tune in and listen to this podcast and I'll get back to you and let you know.
Please do.
Yeah, so... So... Benjamin, Greg Pickering playing Percival the Piss Wizard was okay. One of my favourites.
What is a piss wizard?
It's a wizard. So a wizard has a focus, which is like...
Well, everyone knows that.
Jake, I'm going to need you to play along a little
bit. I'm trying to. Like a vagina. Like a vagina.
So a wizard in D&D has a focus, an arcane focus, and that's something that they use to channel their magical power. Shut up, don't. And this... A wizard.
Yes.
Had a
This wizard is a piss wizard.
Had a colostomy bag.
Oh.
That he uses as his spell focus.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that's the thing that he would hold up to a wolf to make it turn back into a man.
Exactly that.
Okay.
Yeah. So he had a lot of piss jokes, okay. A lot of poo jokes.
Uh-huh.
I love. And also...
Yeah, he must have felt very at home.
Yeah, thank you. Greg Pickering is just like, I think on the stage for me was one of the highlights in that he... So clearly intelligent, so clearly switched on that he's able to like turn anything into like quite a highbrow joke with piss. So,
okay.
So you know, that's I think a fine line to walk.
Mm-hmm.
Another highlight is Benjamin Clements as Brojack, who is a seahorse and very clearly a ripoff of Bojack Horseman.
Okay.
That was just another fun time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and Mish just decided in her character introduction, just going to make herself the hottest fucking bitch in the world.
Okay.
Just made herself like outrageously attractive. And so used to getting everything go her way because of her pretty powers.
Mm-hmm.
Which is something you can do in D&D.
Okay.
And that's the joy. So then we proceed to watch them go through the motions of D&D and the minutiae of D&D, which everyone in the crowd fucking loves.
Okay.
Like, they love watching them argue over, like, certain spells, over, like, the power of certain abilities, over, like, what they should be doing in the D&D campaign.
And you also enjoy these things.
Oh, God, yeah. Especially if it's a bunch of comedians doing it. That's fun.
Right. So if you're into Dungeons & Dragons, this is part of it that you presumably are really into. Like, this is the bulk of, like, the experience of it is these discussions, or is this like a one-off part that happens towards the start?
It's the discussions the whole way through, because the whole thing is talking. And this is something that they sort of keep joking about during it. Simplest decisions can take like an hour.
Okay.
Like whether you should go into a room or not.
Because you have to do it as a group.
Yes, because you need to decide, should we do this? It's like the actual... this is another funny thing, interesting thing in terms of watching this, just from a theatrical point of view. You were sort of able to watch, whereas watching like a play or like a just characters do stuff, you watch like the character on stage. But with this, you watch what you also get to see when you play D&D, which is the actual actors behind the scenes pulling the strings and coming together to decide why their character in the world of the campaign would make the decisions they're making.
Mm-hmm.
So it's almost like getting to watch the actors really just explain why they're doing what they're doing with the characters,
mm-hmm.
to then inform what the characters are going to do. So you sort of watch these characters evolve over time as these actors make more relationship choices with each other.
Mm-hmm.
So that's pretty... What?
No. I'm just trying to imagine that as a play. And I think I've decided that it would be terrible.
Yes, I think it would be.
Unless the actors were really fascinating, or the characters were great, or the stakes were really fascinating.
Well, luckily for us, all these things were true, because the characters were great, the actors were great, and the stakes, I won't get into it too much.
Because you're a vegetarian. But also, too, as you said, it's like it's a different medium.
It's a different medium. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
But, and again, I come back to the crowd, because another highlight of the show was about an hour into it, we had like a little interval, and they hadn't rolled a dice once. And for those of you who don't know, that's unusual.
Okay.
Because it's most logos for any sort of Dungeons & Dragons related things are a D20, which is a 20-sided dice, and you roll dice in Dungeons & Dragons to make a lot of decisions, and it hadn't happened once.
The biggest dice I've ever used is the one from Scattergories.
Okay. And... And
I'll just be over here.
Yeah, I have a feeling you might need to be.
Does that indicate something?
It just indicates they had a lot of talking to get through, which is fine,
mm-hmm.
but the crowd noticed it. I can't remember what the exact interaction was, but at one point someone was like, you need to start rolling dice. And I think the DM was sort of like, yeah, if we don't start rolling dice, they're going to start baying for blood. And we were keen for some dice rolls. And
oh, I just were going to say blood. Yes.
Well, okay. Blood, but in the world of, like, D&D.
Okay.
Yeah. Right. So then they roll the dice. And, Jake, it was like someone had kicked a goal or something. The first dice roll, the crowd goes wild. We're ready to hear the reaction. We're ready to hear what the number is. Greg Pickering brought a dice that was like a light-up dice.
And this is the Piss Wizard.
This is the Piss Wizard, okay. Yeah. Percival, the Piss Wizard. And he brought a dice that when you roll it, it lights up with colours. And it was like, I don't know how to describe the audience reacting. It was like a genuine reveal of like, I don't know, nuclear fusion technology. It was
would that be an expensive dice?
It wouldn't be cheap. I think it looks very custom. He had to get it made. Like, it was put in, like, a special box and everything.
Ooh.
Dice are like coins, and people go crazy for them.
Who goes crazy for coins?
I don't know. I'm trying to think of something collectible.
Gringotts bankers?
Yeah. J.K. Rowling's tasteful take on Jewish people.
God.
Awful.
Awful.
So, brother, and another thing that happened that I really want, that was, like, there was this huge D20. Like, a really big inflatable D20. Like, probably the size of, like, I don't know. Bigger than a basketball, and they brought it out for like one of the big rolls, and you throw it down the crowd, and the crowd passes it around back to the stage, and then they roll with that, and that was just a nice moment of community that they've clearly fostered.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't know. This show was weirdly special to me, because to experience D&D with Flynn for the first time together was quite special. Sounds lame, is lame. But no. Had a really
it
lovely
matters
time.
To you, that's nice.
And being like connected to this many people who all cared about the same sort of thing like so loudly was like going to a sport game and getting it, you know, for the first time in my life.
Sure.
Yeah, I obviously can't tell you what happened because I don't know if they reuse this story. And I don't know how much of it is part of the podcast.
Sure.
But tune in and listen and find out.
Hello, James.
Hi, Jake.
Hey, you won't have to imagine too much for this one because it's in the exact same space that you just described.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, but don't worry. The nerds were gone. And it was just cool people.
Yeah, right. But you were there.
Yes! Yes, I was there alongside other pals of mine as well, just coincidentally. That was nice. Oh. Yeah, and we were there to see Frequent Shit Live! Exclamation mark, just because punctuation matters to me, and it's by Conk, who, any sort of like long-term-ish listener, hello sweet listener, if you've been here for a little while, you're aware that I adore this man very much. He's marvellous. So we get there, the space is kind of like a bit of a mess, there's kind of like additional space provided for the performance to happen in front of the little stage upstairs at the Motley Bauhaus.
Oh.
Sitting there next to my pal Cassandra. Again, what a sweet coincidence.
Oh.
We're all sitting there. The show starts. So the premise of the show, and it's a thing that got briefly touched on if you were here when Conk was on and we sort of like talked about his upcoming project being this thing. He kind of described it. So maybe you're aware of what this is about to be about. But the idea is that Frequent Shit was an Instagram page that Conk used to run.
Mm.
And it was a place for him to put just like sketches up that he thought of, just like say funny jokes to camera. It was just like a lot of like videos of him being goofy and funny for his friends.
Oh.
Bring
it back.
Well, he can't because he got locked out of it and he can't get back into it.
Oh.
So it's very, but what's interesting, one of the many things that's interesting about this artifact now is like it's very much like just sealed behind museum glass. Like it's, he can no longer touch it. It's just kind of there. And this show is kind of like him, like as he describes it, one of the things he's trying to accomplish with the show is to see how to turn these internet artifacts into a live theater performance.
Oh, interesting.
So it's like it's mixed media and by design, quite overwhelming, but quite deliberately. But I think part of what, one of the several things that is so impressive and engaging about this work is that it very much places the audience's engagement and sort of like happiness and satisfiedness. It explicitly brings it to the fore. Like, there are devices that he has in place that are just there to deal with what feels like the audience's interest waning. And even at the start, he's like, go on your phone as much as you want. Like, if I can't hold your attention, then I don't deserve it. Which I think is like a
brave,
fun...
Great.
Yeah, and a fun, like, theatrical mindset to even bring to a thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
To make that connection so explicit. There was such effort made to make the audience feel welcome and necessary and at ease while also bombarding them with so many things. For instance, Jeremiah Dedo was there, beloved clown man,
yeah.
And he was handed a Nintendo Switch during part of it that he was welcome to play as much as he wanted.
Oh.
That was just, like, one of the components. There was a moment where it was almost like a... Like, how much do you care about Abramovich? She's, like, a performance artist.
Is she the one... Tell me something she's done.
Marina Abramovich. Well, the piece that he was kind of, like, sort of paying homage to, in essence, was the one where she just stood still and people were allowed to do whatever they wanted to her.
Oh, God, yes.
I think it was called Rhythm Zero,
And it just got brutal really quickly.
Yeah, it got pretty rough. So he kind of did, like, his own take on that, which went less brutally than it did with Marina.
Thank God, no one conked him on the head.
No. And it was also... So with the additional thing, and I brought this up embarrassedly to him afterwards, like I also found the piece to be very touching too. Like there's just something, of course, it was nice to get to see like footage of who this man was before I came to like know and adore him as much as I do. It was nice to get to have this window into like pre-me parts of him. Like that was just like a nice thing to get to experience on a personal level. But it was also too, like it lends itself so quickly to very like lovely sentimental nostalgia and just, I don't know, points with it being like the exercise that it is, that of digging up these fossils of the past and showing them to us alongside current day him. Like that, I think just like lends itself to the same feeling that looking through a photo album brings you.
Yeah, right.
Like there was that too. Like there was just a moment that, and I don't know how on purposely he wanted this to, I don't know, make Jake feel sad and happy at once. But there was this part where he was like lying down on stage, tossing a pillow up and down. So he was sort of like lying down flat on his back and just like tossing a pillow up onto his like outstretched hands as many times as he could. Mm-hmm. And he was doing this while overlaid behind him on the big projection screen where everything was getting shown. At the same time, it was footage of him doing that a few years ago. And it was like the same action, but it was just like the him from yesterday.
Yeah, right.
And it was just one of the sweetest things ever, I thought.
That's so nice. Why is that so nice?
I can't be super sure. But that was something.
That sounds like a surprisingly emotional comedy show.
Yeah. But again, it felt very accidental because what seems to be, again, at the fore was audience engagement and bombardment. It was also like he threw out one of my favorite jokes throughout the whole thing, and there were many, many jokes in it, was he was counting down his top 10 favorite sound effects that they would go off at random times throughout the entire show. Was just something. So, like, that is the energy of what was happening.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
God, that sounds fantastic.
It was just, like, this whimsical cavalcade, and it was just also a chance to kind of, like, have Kong just fill this room up and have everyone share in this zany experience, I thought.
Gorgonzola's come so far.
Oh, my God, that gondolier. I've heard whispers that he may be making some sort of, like, comeback.
You would die.
But I don't need... I don't want to get anyone too excited about that because it's not in my hands. It's in Gorgonzola's.
And his hands are full of it all.
They are. Something, too, that I find really impressive about Kong's sort of methodology and philosophy and also its presence in this work is his willingness to explore and dive into mistakes and shitness. He even said at the end of this show that he wanted to give himself a chance to make something shit for the last time. Like, I don't know how much that is indicative of what he plans to do next, but he's spoken on this podcast to me in real life and like implicitly through some of his work, this idea of wanting to explore reaching like the other side of terrible and seeing if there's something interesting on the other side of it, you know, and not being afraid of being perceived as being untalented or bad at this or not funny, you know, like the belief that there's something inherently valuable and I don't know, maybe like unexplored perhaps because like people are put off by the fear of seeming mediocre, you know, that if you soldier through that paddock a little longer, then maybe you'll find something on the other side. And I think too, like I was speaking to Jeremiah the other day and he was talking about his like experience at clown school and because he was there for 2 years and he was talking about one of the, I guess, methodologies or something in part of the practice is the idea of like going through the negative and finding something through the negative. And that's just been rolling around in my head since he said it, but also too when reflecting upon Kong's work. It's an interesting thought as well. Like gunning for something other than good. You know, like even this podcast itself was kind of born of the idea of good being a really tedious pursuit.
Oh god, yeah. And also completely undefinable.
That too, sure. Mm. But gunning for something interesting, I think, is a noble pursuit. Something odd, similarly. But even like, it's like striving for bad and being unafraid of it and then seeing what you find through that journey, I think, is just a fun way to go about things.
Yeah, right. Totally.
It was also, again, maybe this is on like a selfish level in terms of my audience satisfaction. It was another opportunity to hear Kong sing. I love his singing voice so much.
Oh, does he sing?
He does. Yes, Gorgonzola the Gondolier.
Oh, shit, of course.
He also sang. That was my first encounter with it. But yeah, no, love his singing voice so much. And I think, too, there's just something outside of just trying to, like, put into words Kong's charisma and delightfulness on stage. The way that he manages, at least in this show, it seemed like it was part of the way that the machine had to work, is that he managed to make it feel so low stakes the entire time while accomplishing so many things and literally accomplishing so many things at once. And it was just great. It was like, it was frantic and delightful and stimulating and not for the cowardly. And afterwards I said to him, I was like, it was great. And I could have taken more. I wanted more. Like I wanted it to keep like slapping me harder and harder. It was great. It was like truly engrossingly, deliberately engaging.
Wow.
And filthy and exciting.
Yeah.
And loving and cool.
Any more words?
That's all the ones I have for now.
Hodgepodge?
No.
Hello.
Hi.
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 I went to the Nicholson building.
Cool.
Yeah.
Where the fuck is that?
Do you know where Retro Star is in the city?
Of course. I go there when I want staff to be mean to me.
Yeah, exactly. Right near Flinders Street. So it's that building.
Okay.
I went up to level 5. I say we. I was alone. Went into like a performance space I'd never been to and sat down in the front row. Very conventional, like chairs and a raised little platform stage.
Okay.
And I'm here to see When I Grow Up by Jeremiah Detto.
And there are 3 dots at the end of the title, right?
Yes. I don't know why you get so caught up with the punctuation. Like, what am I... When I grow up.
Yes.
By Jeremiah Detta.
Fantastic. Yes. There we go. No, I just want to be able to like picture it correctly, and sweet, sweet listener might care too.
There's an ellipsis at the end, everybody.
Mm.
And I'm sitting in the front row, and the stage is taken up by just every prop known to man.
Oh.
Like, covered. There's like... God, what is there? There's a bunch of different, like, different types of sheets. There's, like, a police hat. There's different shirts on a little clothes rack at the back. There's vines. There's a big cat. There's, like, two, like, of those air traffic conducting light-up wands.
Okay.
Like, there's, like, name a thing. It's probably there on stage.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, I've got no idea what this show's going to be. I'm very excited. Nothing happens for a little while. And then we hear, like, a laugh.
What do you mean nothing happens?
So the lights go down.
Okay.
Nothing happens for a little while.
Okay.
And then we hear a laugh from someone in the audience. Mm. And I turn around, and Jeremiah Detta was sitting in the middle of the audience.
Oh, what a witch.
What a witch! In, like, a... like he's wearing, like, one of those, like, swimsuit things. Like, that looks like a wrestling outfit. Like, skin tight.
Okay.
And, like, a little swimming cap.
Okay.
And also, like, what are those Groucho face disguise masks? Like, it's a little...
with glasses and a fake plastic moustache?
Yeah. He's okay. Wearing one of them.
Okay.
And he's sort of, like, clowning it up. Because he's a clown.
How is he clowning it up?
He's doing, like, a character that I don't want to make the noises of because it feels like I'm being rude to clowns if I try and make the noise that they do that I can't do. It's like a... Mr. Bean. He's doing a Mr. Bean impression.
Okay.
And sort of, like, he keeps saying, like... wonder if it's going to be good. And everyone's laughing and loving it. And he gets up, approaches the stage, writes down something on a little piece of paper and drops it in the bucket, and then comes back and sits down again in the audience. And time goes by, and we're all waiting to see what's going to happen. And he eventually has to say, maybe someone should go and write something else down. So we get the hint that we're meant to go up on stage.
Mm-hmm.
And watching like people slowly realize this, slowly work up the courage to go on stage, write down what they wanted to be when they grow up, and put it in this bucket, was fascinating.
Because mm-hmm.
like it was like this slow ripple, and then like one person got up, and then they sat down, and then one other person got up, and then they sat down. And then I sort of asked, should we be going all at once?
Who did you ask that to? The clown.
Yeah, Jeremiah.
Okay.
And Jeremiah sort of replies, there's more than one pen. So we all get up, write down what we wanted to be when we grew up, put it in the bucket, sit down. At a certain point, we run out of paper. Jeremiah gets up and then proceeds to do what the show is, which is he picks out something from the bucket and then, using all of the props and costumes around him, he just sort of like riffs and makes a few little funny clowny scenes out of it.
Okay.
And it is utterly charming.
Mm.
It is so beautiful. First of all, Jeremiah is so tall. He has such a commanding presence.
Mm-hmm.
And he's such, like, a version of clown that I have come to love. He sounds quite similar to, like, Conk. Sounds quite similar to quite a few other clowns that we've seen at this festival so far. But with his own just insane energy behind it that I can't quite put my finger on why it works, but it does. I feel like I should be scared of him. And I was at certain points. But, yeah. So, he, for example, he pulls out Pope. Wanted to be the Pope when you grow up. And he then
was that your suggestion?
No, my suggestion was happy.
Oh.
Which was funny when he did it.
Yeah, and I'm sure. Yeah.
But sad.
Is that dream coming true for you?
No, I'm getting there, though.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, for instance, he would pull out Pope, and then he would sort of, like, find a tall hat and put it on and, like, do a bunch of, like, pretending to christen a baby but accidentally drowning the baby. Or, like, he would then go out into the crowd with, like, a little incense burner thing. And so he would do this for all of these different things that people wanted to be when they grew up.
Was he still doing Mr. Bean voice or was he talking?
It depended on the character. Okay. That Mr. Bean voice was mostly his disguise okay. at the start so that people didn't see that it was him.
Okay.
Which worked flawlessly.
Mm-hmm.
And then for the rest of it, he was just... riffing and whatever the character demanded is what he would do. But it was mostly physical driven. It was mostly physicality rather than using words.
Mm-hmm.
Which was, yeah, really charming to watch. A lot of crowd work, a lot of getting people to just be ridiculously involved in all of his skits, like relying on people to hold him up, giving people cameras to hold and film him, giving people a cat and standing up pretending to be a tree with a cat in it. At one point when he did Happy, another thing I've got to mention, Dougie Baldwin.
Cool. I can also say names.
So Dougie Baldwin, who we saw do Mind How You Go last year.
You saw that.
I saw that.
Yes.
And won a Golden Gibbo for this comedy festival, by the way. Congratulations, Dougie. He was doing the tech for this show. And this was like, I think this show was the ultimate example of the interplay between someone on tech playing with someone doing the actual show. Because a lot of the show relied on sound cues to sort of influence the scene and sort of let us know what's going on. So Dougie was able to really play with Jeremiah in terms of like playing an unexpected sound cue when Jeremiah wasn't expecting it, and Jeremiah would just have to sort of go with it and make it work with the scene. Or vice versa, Jeremiah would sort of do something and sort of say that he requires a sound cue for it by being like, ah, I'm going to smash this window now, and then would hopefully have a glass shattering sound effect by the time he got to it.
That's really funny.
It was really fun, and Dougie's like was very good at doing that, and like playing the right unexpected sound cue for it to be funny and not just like random. Mm. Yeah, it was like watching two real masters at work. Jeremiah... at one point scared the shit out of me. He was doing happy as a prompt. And he was... Somehow, he and Dougie got into this bit where Dougie was sort of like turning the lights on and off sporadically and with enough pauses in between that Jeremiah could sort of get into a pose for the next one. And he was like being like sad while this loud operatic music played, which was quite like, first of all, visually striking. But then one of the times the lights turn on for a few seconds, he was directly in front of me with his face in mine and I wasn't ready for it. And I screamed like a little child.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So that's just something that I experienced during this show.
But you're still pro-clown.
I'm pro-Jeremiah.
Oh, God.
It depends on the clown. I'm pro-Jeremiah Dedo as a clown.
Okay.
Yeah.
So clowns, it's case by case for you.
Oh, God, yeah. Clown okay. by clown. As I'm sure it is for you as well.
Mm-hmm. I have complicated feelings.
You've been falling in love with a lot of clowns recently.
I know!
Is Jeremiah one of them?
That's a very personal question, James.
Mm-hmm. mm-hmm. There was one or two times when the thing he pulled out of the bucket was like swimmer or like wrestler, for example, and he would like make the show of pretending to get ready and then just turn around and just be wearing his undergarments of the wrestling outfit, and they're like, there we go, done. Hmm. Which was quite funny.
That's funny.
One last factor to all of this that I think makes it into something a little more interactive with the audience. Behind him, he had this like clothesline sort of thing up on the wall. And what he would do was he would take the little slip with a piece of paper, and at the end of every set, he would hold it up on there. And on one end it said funny, and on the other end it said not funny. And he would sort of, by audience cheer, rate where that, what he had just done, sort of fit in with the crowd.
Mm.
And would then sort of post it up. So by the end of it, we had like a spectrum of what he what the audience thinks was least funny to most funny in terms of what he had done.
That's amazing.
Which was really fun. And it was also very fun because this was another show where the audience interaction was so direct that you felt a little more confident, where if you were a confident person, you could sort of be like, no, I don't agree with that. Like, you could say something out loud and he would sort of play with it.
Hmm.
Yeah, a very, like, very skillful person at handling an audience member who might be a little too involved. And there were one or two audience members who wanted to be too involved with this show that he had to contend with. And he handled them really nicely and respectfully. There was no shutting them down. He just sort of like played along with what they were doing and turned it into part of his skit.
I feel like if you were a clown, you'd be more vicious with that type
I would be devastating. I'd be like, I would be a mime. I wouldn't say anything, and one person would try to join in, and I would just scream no at them as loud as I could. It'd be the only time I talk in my entire set.
But I do like the idea of you being a mime that somehow also elicits heckles. What are you doing as a mime? But the people are like, fuck you.
I guess I'm blowing mime people.
I don't know, Jake.
Blowing. I'm not a mime. Blowing mime people.
I'm sorry, you as a mime, the scene you are doing is you just gobby deep at an orgy.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, which is not what Jeremiah did. Jeremiah did much more clever things.
Okay.
Very clever. Yeah, it was such a joy to be able to watch Jeremiah do this show. And I think if you get a chance to see it, you definitely should. Because it's obviously going to be completely different every night. And it is such like a testament to the skill that Jeremiah has as a trained clown to actually make this work. And I feel like there's sometimes, I know that in myself before I started seeing clowns, the idea of
I thought you were going to say a therapist.
Oh no, therapy's done nothing for this. No. She said I should stop seeing shows. No, before I started seeing more clowns in shows, mm-hmm. the idea of a trained clown seemed ridiculous to me, and I mm-hmm. thought that anybody could get up and do this sort of shit. To see an actual trained clown do what they do really well, it's like you watch it and you go, oh, there is skill to this. Like, I don't think I could get up and do this. There is, like, a certain level of skill to, like, how long you let a joke last, how long you let the audience member be involved, how long you do that, and how much... there's levels and layers to this that I just couldn't even fathom, and Jeremiah is succeeding in all of them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think if you get a chance to see Jeremiah Detto do anything, he's got another show on called Mush that I think you saw, didn't you?
No, Sebastiano saw
Sebastiano Petrosello saw that.
Si.
Si. Yeah, so Jeremiah... you've won a new fan, and I'm him. That's the prize.
Cleanly put.
Thank you very much. Happy did not win as funniest sketch, although it did come second.
Oh, good for you.
Thank you very much.
Silver medal.
Yeah. Oh, also, the way the show ends, I won't spoil because it's truly beautiful. Mm. But, like, it's a really surprisingly moving and wonderful ending to the show that I just thought was really sweet and such, like, a moment that I saw and made me think, oh, I've never actually seen this in person. That's really nice.
Sure.
Yeah, just to keep people guessing. Yeah. No more from me.
Hey there, James.
Hi, Jay.
Hey, I went to the MC showroom.
Oh, I know the one. Is there still a hole in the roof?
I always forget to check.
Jay.
I'm too focused on enjoying myself at the theater.
Listeners want to know.
That... I don't know. I'll do some reconnaissance as soon as I can.
Thank you so much.
So I was there to see In the Wings.
Okay.
Which is a theatre term.
Because In the Wings means you're standing in the wings of the show stage area.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Yeah,
you're
I know
good.
That.
You're good.
I know that.
The show itself is written by Rex Cameron and Charlie Veitch, mm-hmm. who are both in it. It's set in a private school. The two characters, the two central characters are in year 11.
Okay.
And it's a four-person cast. So it's the two of them, and then there's also Shanu Sobti, who plays a girl that's in the musical that's happening in the school.
Lovely.
And she also plays a teacher as well. And then James Provis plays a year 12 student and also a PE teacher as well.
Oh, God. So okay. Everyone's doing double duty.
Two people are doing double duty. The other two are just playing their characters the entire time. This is very high concept stuff, so I'm glad that you're keeping
wrapping
up.
Wrapping my head around it.
Yes, yes, yes. Keep asking questions as often as you need to. So what's happening in the school is they're about to do Les Mis. The musical. You're familiar.
I am.
Yes. It's set in France.
So they say.
Yes. And the play really kind of all takes place very Aristotelianly.
In the wings?
In one space. Unity of space. It was one of the components of theatre. You're not familiar with Aristotle?
No. Never heard of him.
It's all happening in the one space. And so what it is we kind of, so we meet Charlie's character, who's this like very lovely, sensitive, musical loving boy. Mm. And then we also have Rex's character, who's like a stoic, kind of like troubled seeming, kind of like, I don't know, you could imagine him smoking a cigarette, but he never does it. You know?
Okay,
just like
sure.
Quiet and jockey and a bit bad boy-y.
Yeah.
And it's the two of them. Okay. So it's almost like the classic odd couple.
Lovely.
Yeah.
That's a great setup. Will they, won't they?
Will they
get long?
Oh, not, sure.
Yeah. I heard that too, yeah.
When are they going to kiss?
Okay, kiss. Yeah, that works.
So it's the two of them, and the whole play is set in the workshop, sort of backstage at this private school that is about to stage Les Mis.
Right, okay. Oh, cool.
Yeah, and these two guys are working on the set and the props for the show, is the idea.
Oh,
and it sort of begs the question, though. It's like, clearly, Charlie's character is really interested in musical theatre. He's constantly referencing musical theatre. He really loves singing and music and theatre generally, and he has a lot of friends in the musical.
Mm.
And then we also, of course, have Rex's character, who is there as, like, a detention. It's like that.
Oh, okay. Sure,
yeah,
sure.
She's been shoved into the theatre department to, like, teach him a lesson about, you know, truancy or something, you know? Like, he's just been a bad student lately.
Yep.
Yeah, so that's that dynamic set up. And then as it moves forward, we just, like, learn more about what these characters are doing here in this predicament. I guess this is a good point at which to flag the fact that I loved this show so much. I also should flag, to a much less significant extent, there was a girl eating a kebab for half of it.
In the audience?
Two seats to my left. So, the first
what?
Half of the play did smell like meat and onions, but that's not relevant.
Why was she allowed to bring a kebab in?
It's a wild place.
Jesus. If you listened to this and you were that woman eating a kebab, no. Fuck you.
James, don't say fuck you. She was like a lovely young lady.
Doesn't matter. Don't eat a kebab in the theatre.
James.
Sorry. That's a pretty simple rule. Carry on.
God.
That's a pretty simple rule. I don't think I should expect to walk into a theatre and have to smell garlic and meat.
Sorry. I brought it up because it was funny.
No,
I didn't want you to, she's annoyed me. I didn't want you to yell at this girl.
Too bad. Yelled at.
But so the play happens. And thematically, I'm so deeply into it because it's as a structured piece of drama, it's so lean and muscular and it just moves. You know, like even in the way that it's directed, like the dialogue just keeps like rocketing along, like nothing gets dwelled within. There's even like, these are like very young theatre makers and they've written this show and it's like one of the, like they've dodged so many pitfalls that people fall into the first time that, I don't necessarily know that this is the first play they've written.
Yeah.
But it's, I don't know, it's early in their careers and they've already written a piece of drama that does not have all of these things that tend to happen with people that are putting on plays at this point in their career. Like,
wow.
It's not full of long descriptions of memory, you know? It doesn't have, like, an out-of-nowhere, like, three-quarters of the way through twist because they forgot to imbue it with any sense of narrative.
Right.
You know, there's no unnecessary characters. Mm. There's, I don't know, there's no, like, cheap sitcom gags. Like, it's cleverly crafted, moves at a wonderful pace, and on top of that, too, these performances are just magnificent.
Oh, my God.
Like, just to start for no reason, at James Provis, who, he being one of the two actors that have to play two characters, he's really, truly incredible. Mm. He manages to play this, like, very, like, lovable, goofy, like, I don't know, like, deadeningly masculine, like, playful PE teacher, who's almost akin to the one from Hating Allison Ashley, the Delta Goodrum movie.
Don't know what that is. Did you fall in love with this PE teacher?
No, that's not what I'm getting at all. No, but at the same time also plays Lark, who is this, like, year 12 student who's, like, drama captain and all of these, like, you know, these, like, significant important things for, a private boys' school.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
But also who, of course, like, has an interesting, like, dark streak to him.
Quack, quack, quack.
You know, and plays both of these characters with such roundedness and recognizability, and there's so many layers to them.
Hmm.
And I don't know, by the end, certainly depending on your, like, moral leanings, like, one is quite villainous and the other is, you know, quite, like, harmless and lovable, but they're still two. Ooh. Like, no one in this show is reduced to caricature.
Wow.
Like, everyone, they're fully formed people with their own complexities. And it's like any combination of people on the stage, which I think is a true mark of, like, successful drama, is you can take any of the characters and put them next to each other and you can expect something engaging to happen.
Oh,
you know,
wow.
Like, there's enough roundedness to everyone that friction, and interesting friction, is inevitable, which I thought was a real accomplishment. I do need to flag an interesting thing that happened in terms of my experience of the show outside of the kebab.
I was about to say, more interesting than the kebab? Okay.
There was this guy eating spaghetti. No.
Slurping spaghetti he was.
This thing happened. So it's like, we're about, like, so there's time jumps, which is signposted by this whiteboard in the back left corner. Mm-hmm. And it's like a number of weeks until opening night. And as time progresses, someone comes on and, like, rubs off the number and changes it to what it is.
Okay.
That's one element of things. Which also means that, like, throughout the show, there are, like, little sort of, like, quasi-blackouts where people, like, come on and shift things and make them ready for, like, the time jump to happen.
Mm.
So it happens the first time. This gentleman comes on, whose name is Ethan Wisher. Comes on, and he's the stage manager, and he comes on sort of, like, in this quasi-darkness, and there's, like, this mysterious sort of music playing, and he, like, moves some things around on a table, like, shifts a backpack or something, and then leaves.
Okay.
I think that this character is, like, a menace.
Check. No. Don't tell me, do you then believe there was some sort of demonic force in the room? Is that what you're saying?
It wasn't until the third time it happened,
Jane,
that I was like, oh my God, it's just a stagehand.
You thought it was, like, some sort of hereditary, like...
It was because there was music and everything to underscore his, like, menacing...
No.
It's like, oh no!
Here comes the devil from Sinister. Oh no!
I was,
Jesus.
I was like, oh, why is no one mentioning the fact that all those nails went missing?
Oh my God, that's really funny.
I'm a fucking idiot.
No, yes, but also, no, yeah, you are a fucking idiot, but that's funny. That's a funny mistake to make.
But I worked it out.
I don't know what to say to that. But also, I guess we're not used to seeing stagehands. Like, so often now it's, like, the actors that move things around to have, like, a stagehand come on and do it. It's a bit, feels quite retro.
Good.
A bit old school.
It's a real throwback.
Yeah.
And that's why I was flummoxed. I'm really into, you know, more, like, I don't know, neo-modernism. But that's sort of, yeah. Let's like, shift focus to Shanu Sobti, who played these two wonderful characters, one of whom was this, like, sweet but, like, very assertive, like, drama teacher woman that was, I don't know, responsible for kind of, like, providing the order and the discipline to these characters, broadly speaking.
Yep.
It was also, you know, up to other stuff. Some of the things romantic.
Oh!
Yes.
Ooh la la.
Yes. Yes. But the character of Shanu's that I want to highlight is the one of this, like, this character named Mia, and she was like this musical theater girl, but I loved how like vicious she was. It was like still lovable the entire time, and again very recognizable too in her depiction of this person, but it was very like she'd have sentences like, oh yeah, that dumb fucking bitch.
Like, that's just how we talk.
But it was great.
That's fantastic.
And for her to simultaneously like highly value musical theatre but also be like such a product of like the cattiness and the superficiality that can exist in that realm as well.
Yeah.
But at the same time, at no point was I rooting against her. Like, there was just something sweet. And I guess anyone that loves theatre, I'm just much more, like, I don't know, I'm quicker to root for, I suppose.
Yes, that makes sense.
I don't know, there was just something in it. And I was like, and I wanted her to be happy. I wanted her to get a good role. I wanted her to wear a wig that she liked. Like, these are all things that I cared about. And
the drama behind the stage is more interesting than the drama on the stage half the time.
The drama of drama.
The drama of making drama.
Oh my god, yes. A textbook by James Hardy.
Yeah. Open it up, there's not much in there.
On the cover, don't read this. A quote from me.
A quote from Jake.
Yes.
You cunt.
I'm going to bring you down.
What's your book called?
Better than James's book.
Yeah, probably would be.
Good. I found this show to be so tremendously moving. Like, it was nuts. Like, I cried on the walk home.
Oh, Jake.
Which is humiliating, but also it's the mark of good theatre, seemingly, because every time it happens, it's a thing that's, you know, moved me. And it was for a number of reasons. And one of them, of course, was like, we've talked a little bit about that whole, like, inner child idea, thought of, like, trying to, like, nurture and protect and care about that inner part of you that you have to try not to hate because you're trying to sort of, like, keep them alive.
Yeah.
And it was, like, watching... James. Like, literally the next day, I couldn't think about the play without almost crying. Like, I had to keep distracting myself. It's so pathetic.
Why?
It's because...
No, that wasn't meant to sound so... Just, like, why?
Because it was so many things. And one of them, at least for me... as a gay person that, you know, went through, like, the private boys' school system, and had, you know, like, a moderately fine experience there, but it was, like, even just, like, watching these, like, young boys, like, these, like, tender boys, sort of, like, practicing manliness and, like, turning into men, and these characters talking to each other, and it's, like, they're all just kind of, like, they're dealing with these, like, needs and wants that they have inside of themselves and also dealing with how they're being told to relate to those needs and wants and also having to do it next to each other and, like, not knowing how loving to be or how protective to be or if their feelings are right or wrong. And it's, like, and they have to rely on each other to, I don't know, give them some type of social framework to work within. And it's just, and I don't know, to what extent you, like, end up accidentally hurting someone. And I don't know, it's just also high stakes. Like, it was so devastating.
Are you tearing up right now?
No, James, that'd be very weak. No. But it's just, it's just like young, tender men just trying to turn into people that they can stand being for the next time being.
That sounds devastating.
And it was that, and it was like, and I was seeing Charlie characterizing this man that he wrote. And it's the two of them. But, like, for me, especially Charlie, in the way that he was just so, like, openly, like, loving and passionate and unafraid of seeming like a goddamn fool and like a stupid loser who loves to sing. Like, he was just so expressive and, like, I don't know, he just let his passion fill himself up. It was just incredible.
I'll say again, Jake is actually tearing
up. Oh, shut up forever.
That's so lovely.
But that's the thing. It was like, it was this person sort of unashamedly doing this, but then also having to deal with the way that people treat a person like that. And I don't know, and just like in him existing as a character on this stage and as someone that has been written by these talented artists. It's just, that was me crying on the walk home. That was me realizing through the walk. It was like, oh my goodness. It's just like that thing that I think so many artists, so many gay men, so many people that for whatever reason can connect to that type of character where it's like, yeah, this is a version of me when I was younger that I like was. Like, it's not, you don't choose to be that way. You just are that way. And then you have to deal with how much of it do you show to people and how, and you have to deal with like people being faced with it and like rejecting it. And it was devastating.
Yeah, I was about to say that would be devastating.
Yeah. And it was, and two, like, and these two characters playing opposite each other, like, there's so much in the sense of like, and it is a quintessential gay thing, but it's also just like a man thing and many other things, I'm sure too. But the idea of like soft, tender, passionate, weird, loving, musical weirdo opposite this like stoic, but young and like masculine to an extent that some would describe as toxic, but like clearly wanting to be loving, but also maybe doesn't have the tools necessary to show that love.
Yeah, doesn't know how.
Yeah. Or it's like, or maybe it's like it's the type of love where it's like in order to show it, it just manifests in ways that are less blatant, you know? Like, maybe it's not a matter of, like, being able to say loving things, but it's a matter of being able to, like, do protective things. And that desire to be protective is what their love looks like.
God.
You know? And it was just, and watching those two types of masculinity play opposite each other was
love talk about masculinity.
Oh, my God. And it was just so layered and complicated. And it was just, yeah, really, really upsetting. It was just,
in the best way.
It was really lovely. I was like, and it was like the last show that I saw of the festival.
Oh.
And it was just, it was the perfect way for this festival to end.
Oh, that's so lovely.
These actors are so talented. It was such a well-written show. I wish I could see it again sometime. And I couldn't get over it. It was, I don't know. Yeah. A play about like love and connection and youngness. And the arts, I guess.
That sounds like a cocktail designed to kill you.
That's the thing. It was like, it was so many of like, I don't know. They, I don't know. There's so many of my wounds at once were just being like
ripped open.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. But in a way that felt healing and useful.
My God, but that's the, mama, that's the gift of theatre. That's what theatre's all about.
Sure. That's such a funny proclamation. Yeah. Anyway, I'll stop talking. Otherwise, I'll just start, like, crying and saying nonsense. So let's stop there. Wow.
Wow.
The goddamn Chucklefest. And then they never laughed again.
No, save the chuckling for this time next year.
Exactly. Yep.
Wow.
Put it in the freezer.
Only some dry sighs from now on.
That's it. Anyway, well, sweet listener, thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for chuckling with us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. The next episode that happens, we'll just be back to regular programming.
Yeah,
just
sorry about that, guys. Yeah, I hope you saw some things that made you chuckle this comedy festival.
Yes, yeah. Or made you cry about your unhealed childhood wounds.
I hope less of that and more of the chuckling, though, given the name of the festival.
Yeah. Anyway, we might already disagree with things we just said.
Yes, we may. And friends, don't let friends become theatre critics.
No, my goodness, truly.
Absolutely not.
Oh my, if they're even considering
even for a festival.
Oh my God, you shake them by the shoulders and you say, no, not another one.
And you slap them.
Yes.
We have enough.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Yep. Thanks, Jake, for doing this Chucklefest with me.
Ah, you're welcome. I have nothing to say back.
And that's the last chuckle we ever had.
Oh, God, don't say that.
No, until next year.
Saved it.
Still sad.
A good Chucklefest to you all.
Merry Chucklefest to all of us.